The Bristol Bay Fisheries Report is brought to you by the Bristol Bay Regional Seafood Development Association, ensuring long-term growth in the world's greatest salmon fishery through investments in Bristol Bay science, infrastructure, marketing, and quality. The Bristol Bay RSDA, we are on board with you.
This is KDLG's Bristol Bay Fisheries Report. I'm Mike Mason. Imagine that instead of it being July 7th, it's actually July 15th. That's how the 2013 sockeye run to Bristol Bay is shaping up, about 8 days early. Now, what are you normally doing on July 15th? Exactly. We'll have more details on the early run coming up on today's Bristol Bay Fisheries Report. But first, here are the latest announcements from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
This is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game and King Salmon with an update for Ikagik and Ugashik District fishermen. The time of this announcement is 12 noon, and the date is Sunday, July 7th. In Ikagik, through July 6th, our cumulative harvest is 4.2 million. Escapement on Saturday was 17,000, and cumulative escapement is 808,000. The Ikagik District commercial fishery will continue to stand down on July 8th. In Ugashik, escapement on Saturday was 25,000, and our cumulative escapement is 215,000. In river indices stayed flat and do not show enough of an increase in volume to justify commercial opportunity. The Ugashik district will stand down again on July 8th. Fishermen in both districts should stand by at 12 noon on Monday, July 8th, for the next possible announcement. This has been the Alaska Department of Fish and Game and King Salmon. This is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game and King Salmon with an update for commercial permit holders in the Naknek-Quijack District. The time is 12 noon, and the date is Sunday, July 7th. The midnight to 6 a.m. count for the Naknek River was 4,000 sockeye for a cumulative count of 580,000. The midnight to 6 a.m. count for the Quijack River was 9,000 sockeye for a cumulative count of 1.6 million. The Quijack in-river estimate is 50,000 sockeye. Based on current catch and escapement information to the Naknek-Quijack District, the projected total run to the Quijack River is now 4.0 million sockeye salmon. Under the current escapement goal plan for the Quijack River, the escapement goal is adjusted in season to 50% of the total run. The department is reducing the escapement goal to 2.0 million sockeye. The Naknek-Quijack District will remain closed. The next update for the Naknek-Quijack District will be at 12 noon on Monday, July 8th. This has been the Alaska Department of Fish and Game and King Salmon.
This is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in Dillingham with an announcement regarding subsistence fishing in the Nishigak District. This is West Side Salmon Announcement Number 28, issued Sunday, July 7th at 9 a.m. Effective immediately, subsistence fishing on the Dillingham beaches is open 7 days per week. Run timing is exceptionally early, and the commercial harvest is low. In order to provide additional opportunity for subsistence users, the 3-day-per-week schedule is being waived. The Wood River escapement has not yet reached the 1.1 million mid-range goal. Until that happens, permit holders wishing to transfer to the Nishigak District are subject to the regular transfer regulations. This has been the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in Dillingham.
If you appreciate KDLG, please consider becoming a member during our annual membership drive, which starts Monday and runs through the 12th. It's the best way to show support for your local public radio station, coming up this week, July the 8th through the 12th. The Bristol Bay Fisheries Report will continue in a moment. You're listening to the Bristol Bay Fisheries Report here on listener-supported public radio, KDLG. Hundreds of fishermen, processing workers are all on hold across the entire east side of Bristol Bay as all three of the districts are on hold waiting for more fish. Paul Solomon is the ADFNG Area Management Biologist for the Ikagik and Ugashik districts.
In Ikagik, here's what I'm looking at. We'll start with that one because it's relatively simple. We've been passing between 10 and 15,000 fish up river every day. I have 170 drift nets or set nets or set netters, and I have 300 drift netters that all want a piece of that. It's not going to go very far. So at this point in time, I don't need to use the fleet to manage the escapement because it's very manageable right now on its own. And the allocation is where it needs to be, so no gear group needs to try and fish to make that up. And my last directive is to try and minimize escapement bound or minimize interception of stocks bound for other districts. If I turn the fleet loose down there, we will catch fish that don't belong there, and those fish need to go where they belong.
Saturday's escapement count to the Igigik River was 17,000 sockeye to push the district total to over 807,600 fish. That puts escapement at just over the lower end of the goal, which is between 800,000 to 1.4 million sockeye. As of 9 o'clock this morning, there were 379 drift permits registered to fish in the Igigik district. The vessel count is 303 with 76 D boats. Solomon is hoping things improve enough to allow some fishing effort in the district.
There's an outside possibility we have a late season component that shows up in Igigik. It's not very much, but it's consistent enough to watch for it. If that shows up, I'll give folks a shot at it, but I don't want to foster false hopes.
The harvest in the Igigik district is over 4.1 million sockeye, which is still below the preseason forecast that anticipated that 4.7 million sockeye might be available for commercial harvest. That's based on a forecasted run of 6.1 million, and through Saturday, the total run to the Igigik district, including harvest, escapement, and the in-river estimate, is just over 5 million fish. Things look even bleaker down in the Ugashik district, where Solomon asserts there is still a long way to go to get within the escapement goal for the Ugashik River, which is between 500,000 to 1.2 million sockeye.
In my best-case scenario, I need about 150,000. That's my best-case scenario. It's more like 200.
On Saturday, another 24,800 sockeye were counted as escapement to the Ugashik River to push the season total to 215,400. Fish and Game's estimating there are another 80,000 sockeye in the Ugashik River that have not yet been counted as escapement. In the announcement that was issued at noon today, Solomon noted that the in-river indices stayed flat and do not show enough of an increase in volume to justify commercial opportunity.
The way the runs developed this year, we're seeing the escapements we're seeing right now up there occurred in the district about 4 to 5 days ago. I have had a couple of little bit larger indexes the past couple of days, indices, and they might give me 35 or 40, but that's still going to be a while before we get to where we need to be. I would not release the fleet until I was comfortable. We had at least a minimum in there, and I'm not even remotely close to that right now.
The total harvest through Saturday in the Ugashik district is well over 1.8 million sockeye, which is well below the 2.6 million fish that were forecasted to be available for harvest in the district. That's based on a total run of 3.5 million. Through Saturday, total run, including harvest, escapement, and the in-river estimate, was nearly 2.2 million fish. Currently, there are 206 drift permits registered to fish in the Ugashik district. Those permits are on 163 drift vessels and 43 D-boats. Solomon agrees that the 2013 run to the Igigik and Ugashik districts showed up early.
I've been tracking seven all year long. Ugashik, it's probably going to be in the order of seven right now. I'm not sure I have enough data to really conclusively say that. But I believe it's certainly earlier than it was last year. And if I use the 2011, run as a yardstick, the midpoint of that was on the second. So we're past that by this point.
Fishermen in both the Igigik and Ugashik districts should stand by at noon on Monday for the next possible announcement about fishing time. The Bristol Bay Fisheries Report will continue in a moment. This is the Bristol Bay Fisheries Report on KDLG. The other district to join the Igigik and Ugashik districts in being closed to commercial fishing effort is the Naknek-Quijack District. Area Management Biologist Slim Morstad confirms that additional escapement is needed to both rivers. He says there does not appear to be many fish in the pipeline.
No, it's even dropping off less and less every day.
On Saturday, another 22.9 thousand sockeye were counted as escapement to the Kwajalein River. That pushes the season total to 1.5 million. Fish and Game has reassessed the size of the Kwajalein run down to 4 million, which puts the escapement goal for the Kwajalein River at 2 million. Saturday's escapement count to the Naknek River was 12.9 thousand to push the total to 574.2 thousand, still well short of the escapement goal of 800,000 to 1.4 million. Morestad says there is no other alternative other than sitting the fleet down in favor of more escapement.
Nope, it's even dropping off. Less and less every day. Yeah, that's correct. I mean, there's not even enough fish out there for a small fleet.
The Naknek Kwajalein District currently features the largest drift fleet in Bristol Bay. There are currently 668 drift permits registered in the district on 538 drift vessels. 130 of those drift vessels are D boats. Commercial fishermen in the Naknek Kwajalein District are asked to stand by at noon on Monday for the next possible announcement about additional fishing time.
The Bristol Bay Fisheries Report is made possible in part by AIFMA, the Alaska Independent Fishermen's Marketing Association, 1-800-816-3741.
This is KDLG. As you just heard, the entire east side of Bristol Bay is shut down as the Alaska Department of Fish and Game tries to get more sockeye counted as escapement. That means the only fishing time is in the Nooshigak and Togiak districts. All three of the counted rivers in the Nooshigak district have reached their escapement goals. Another 16.2 thousand sockeye were counted as escapement to the Nooshigak River to push the total to over 835.4 thousand. That's approaching the upper end of the new escapement goal, which is 840,000 fish. Saturday's escapement count for the Agushik River was 14.1 thousand sockeye, pushing the season total to 268.3 thousand fish. That's approaching the upper end of the goal, which is 300,000 sockeye. Saturday's count to the Wood River was 23.1 thousand, and there were another 3.9 thousand sockeye counted through 6 o'clock this morning. That pushes total escapement to the Wood River up to just over 1 million sockeye. The escapement goal for the Wood River is 700,000 to 1.5 million fish. That puts the midpoint at 1.1 million. Once that midpoint is reached, the Alaska Department of Fish and Game can waive the transfer restriction into the Nooshigak District. Tim Sands is the area management biologist for the district.
We would probably waive it. You know, we had 23,000 escapement yesterday, so it probably won't happen tomorrow. It'll probably be the next day. If it slows down, it could be even the day after that. You know, we want to get that 1.1 million up there before we waive it. We're not going to do it before then.
Commercial fishermen in the Nooshigak District hauled in another 107,000 sockeye Saturday to push the season total up to 2.8 million. That coupled with the escapement numbers puts the total run to the Nooshigak District at just over 5 million. That's pretty close to the preseason forecast of 5.2 million. The preseason forecast anticipated that the harvest in the Nooshigak District could be 3.1 million, and by the time it's all said and done, the harvest will likely be somewhere close. Fish and Game confirms that on Saturday, there were on average 286 sockeye per drift delivery in the Nooshigak District. By all accounts, this year's run to Bristol Bay, and especially the Nooshigak District, was extremely early. The University of Washington's Fisheries Research Institute puts the run about 8 days early, and Sand says that's about right for the Nooshigak District.
That's exactly what my guys have been telling me for the Nooshigak, is that the Nooshigak was 8 days early, so that means that today's really the 15th of July.
Since the peak of the run has obviously come and gone in the district, the Alaska Department of Fish and Game has liberalized subsistence fishing around Dillingham. Again, Fish and Game's Tim Sands.
It is wide open now. There's no restriction for the three-day-per-week schedule, and that's because, we feel like it's really more like the 15th of July run-wise, and we're not concerned about people being slammed if they leave their nets out. So that's kind of we want to provide opportunity for people who might not have got all the fish they needed.
The dwindling sockeye run to all of the big effort districts in Bristol Bay resulted in a lot of interest in the sockeye run to the Togiak District, which normally times out a little later than the other sockeye runs in the bay. Matt Jones is the assistant area management biologist for both the Nooshigak and Togiak districts.
For starters, we're short on information that other districts have in Bristol Bay in terms of early indicators of run timing, namely the Port Mueller test fishery, is where all these other districts get their idea that, we're early or late, are kind of two indicators of what's going on over in Togiak, are the commercial success in the commercial fishery, and then also what goes by our counting towers up on Togiak Lake. And so we just started counting on July 3rd, and we did did have right out of the gates strong escapement for those first 3 days of the tower's operation. And that put us ahead of the game by a few days from, you know, what's expected, what history tells us is expected. You know, it's not enough information really to make some conclusions about if the run's early in my mind. But maybe, you know, in another week we'll have a better idea, maybe if we're early. But every year can be a little bit different in terms of when we get that escapement on Togiak, and maybe it's always a trickier one to gauge run timing. But as of now, I'd say there's a chance we're early.
On Saturday, another 1.4 thousand sockeye were counted as escapement to the Togiak River to push the season total to 16.2 thousand fish. The escapement goal for the Togiak River is 150,000 sockeye. The Togiak District is treated differently than the other commercial fishing districts in Bristol Bay in that there are restrictions about who and when people can fish in the district. Permit holders who've already fished their permit this season in another district can't transfer into the Togiak District until July 27th. Tim Sands is also the area management biologist for the Togiak District.
If you're a permit holder, you can't transfer your permit over there. If you have a permit that hasn't fished, then that permit can fish over there. And if you're going to take it on a vessel that's fished somewhere else, then the vessel has to fill out a transfer form and wait 48 hours.
The other restriction placed on the Togiak District is that once a permit is registered in the district, it can't be transferred out of the district until July 27th. Fishing Game's Matt Jones stresses that fishermen that find a way into the Togiak District before or after July 27th should take into consideration who they will sell their catch to.
For those who might be thinking about going over there, they should definitely be aware that market is very limited over there. And before they think about transferring, definitely before they do any paperwork, they better be sure they have a market over there if they want to go over to Togiak and fish.
Fishermen should note that at last December's Board of Fisheries meeting focused on Bristol Bay, the board approved a change to regulations which eliminates the ability for D-boats to fish in the Togiak District. Jones confirms the Board of Fish also approved another change in the district.
And also, some folks aren't aware also that there was a change in the drift boundary near the Togiak River, only for drift gillnet fishing only, and that boundary prior to July 16th. The boundary for drift fishing was moved out a little bit from the Togiak River. Those coordinates are in regulation now, and folks should definitely be aware of that. And there's also an illustrated map with coordinates on our website.
Saturday's commercial harvest in the Togiak District was 18,000 sockeye to push the season total to 108,400. Jones says the sockeye run normally starts gaining some strength around this time in July.
Typically, these first 2 weeks in July, we see the catch definitely ramp up, particularly in the kind of the second, third weeks in July. But the first week in July is usually a little bit better than it was this time around. And from what we've heard, there was some bad weather earlier in this past week that slowed things down and prevented some folks from fishing. There was also a funeral going on over in Togiak, and that can kind of take a lot of the community away from commercial fishing. So the combination of those factors led to a little less than average fishing for this first week in July, but coming up here this second week in July is also the second week of this peak fishing schedule that runs through the first 2 weeks in July. Yeah, as I mentioned, it's usually, you know, the second and third weeks of July are the historic peak for that whole sockeye fishery, so we're optimistic there'll be a lot of people out there and having success this week.
Currently, there are 59 drift permits and vessels registered to fish in the Togiak District. That's expected to increase up to 61 permits and vessels in 48 hours. The Bristol Bay Fisheries Report will continue in a moment. This is KDLG's Bristol Bay Fisheries Report. I'm Mike Mason. The effort to cap the vents on the fuel tanks aboard the sunken Tender Lone Star was only partially successful on Friday night. Tom Callahan of the Meredith Management Group is the incident commander for the owner of the Lone Star. KDLG News spoke with Callahan on Saturday.
There is some residual sheening coming from the vessel. We saw about a drop a second is coming up from the vessel, so it's leaving a discontinuous sheen about 300-500 yards downstream from the vessel, about a foot wide, discontinuous, dissipates, and it's a very light silver sheen, and this is a less than the thickness of a human hair type of oil. So it's we're very encouraged, and they have some other follow-on operations plan to plug additional vents that are down in the mud, and we're hopeful that that'll be able to get to the point where it's completely buttoned up and have no further sheening from the vessel. That's the goal.
The responders are not certain of the type of petroleum product or products leaking from the Lone Star, but they intend to locate and plug all of the vents on the various fuel tanks on the Lone Star. Again, Tom Callahan, who flew into Dillingham on Saturday.
What they encountered when they did the dive operations last evening at Slackwater was the vessel is down on the starboard side, and the fuel vents and fills on that side are down in the clay, in the mud, so they couldn't gain access to them. So that's the intent is tomorrow they've restaged and reconfigured how they will get down into the mud, pumping it out of the way so they can get to those vents and seal those as well.
The most immediate impact of the fuel coming out of the Lone Star is the closure of the commercial fishery in the area. The entire Agushik section is closed to set net fishing, and a large six-mile closure has been instituted for the drifters around the mouth of the Agushik River, which is the resting place for the Lone Star. ADFNG Area Management Biologist Tim Sand says the closures will stay in place for the time being.
We're keeping what's closed closed until we're sure that there's no oil whatsoever coming from there and no oil remaining on the beaches. And so, in my estimation, we would fly tomorrow at some point. If we heard that they plugged the vents, we'd fly tomorrow, and then we'd probably wait a whole another 24 hours and fly again and just make triple sure that it's shut down and there's nothing coming off. And then we'd have to still, be on the lookout after that.
That means that the fishing closure impacting the Agushik Beach set netters will likely stay in place for at least a couple of more days, maybe longer. On Friday, Fish and Game received reports of oiled nets, which resulted in the immediate closure of fishing in the area. Sands doesn't know how much gear was actually impacted by the sheen coming off the Lone Star. He also confirms that he's received reports of petroleum products on some of the beaches in the area. Sands says the Department of Fish and Game has zero tolerance for fishing in areas impacted by the sheen coming from the Lone Star.
I need to be 100% confident that there's no chance whatsoever of anything being contaminated before we can open it up again.
Sands stressed that the commercial fishery closures won't be lifted until the open fuel vents on the Lone Star are plugged, and that effort is expected to happen sometime this evening during the low tide. The federal on-scene coordinator's representative in Dillingham is Frank Sciano with the U.S. Coast Guard. He confirms that the efforts to use containment boom around the Lone Star last week didn't work.
Initial response, which was the initial casualty, which was on the 30th of June, Coast Guard immediately reacted, and we contracted Chideau to get out here to do spill mitigation and to ensure any type of pollution cleanup if necessary. July 1st, when all equipment was being staged, there were attempts to boom the area off and to try to put some seclusion booming in some areas and some containment booming around the vessel. However, due to the 8 knots, no seclusion booming was tried, and then the containment booming that was put on failed, and the next morning we indicated that we just couldn't control that type of current. The entrainment's just too strong.
Sciano confirms that so far the efforts to use skimming equipment have not yet been successful. It's believed that the Lone Star is carrying over 13.7 thousand gallons of diesel fuel and about 300 gallons of other petroleum products, and the vessel sitting in the mouth of one of the major salmon-producing rivers in Bristol Bay. Sciano revealed that even though the responders don't think the fuel that's causing the sheen is recoverable, they have been trying.
We want to make every effort possible, so even though it didn't look recoverable, we still wanted to get people on scene and stage some equipment and at least try. Just like we tried the containment booming, we did feel that that was not going to work, but we wanted to give it an effort anyway. So we did that as well yesterday. We still have Shadow on scene, and they're going to still be on scene today until tonight. We are having equipment staged in that area with immediate response within 20, 30 minutes of anything that does occur if unfortunate events happen.
Shiano confirms that so far efforts to use the skimming equipment have not been successful. The Lone Star is sitting on its starboard side, and Shiano confirms a portion of the vessel can be seen above the waterline during the low tide. However, he says the location of the vessel makes it a very challenging place to respond to.
I've been in Alaska for almost 4 years now, and I've handled quite a few spills. This has been the first time that logistically we've just had such complications with keeping equipment in the field. The current itself is quite strong, and nothing you could put in there would do any good. And at the same time, our actual equipment that's needed to stage is so far away. For example, Dam and Gone Services has contracted their tugboat out in Adak, which is making its way over now. We just did not have the equipment here necessary at the time. There's been quite a many spills lately, and it's expanded the equipment from all OSROs and salvage operators.
Currently, the response vessel Western Viking and the tug Double Eagle are expected to make it to the Dillingham area from Dutch Harbor somewhere in the middle of this week, which means the lightering effort to get the fuel off the Lone Star will have to wait a few more days. Incident Commander Tom Callahan says the assets from Dutch Harbor will be used in both the lightering effort and in the effort to remove the Lone Star from its current location.
What they're going to do is bring the barge alongside the wreck, and the intent is to pipe into the fuel tanks and drain, pump the oil out of the tanks and backfill it with water, and then the work on righting the vessels. The finer points of that are what's being worked out. As they go down and dive on it, they learn more about the condition and the situation of the vessel, and that helps drive the exact details of their operation.
Both Callahan and Shiano confirm the goal is to get the fuel off the Lone Star as soon as possible. Shiano hopes that the lightering operation won't impact commercial fishing if and when the current closures are lifted.
And during lightering operations, we don't see a big impact with the fisheries. We do have all the OSROs and equipment. The pollution response equipment is going to be staged. We're going to have licensed crew, inspected vessels and barges. It's going to be a very robust team out there. So we're trying to do as big and as great as possible to keep the fishing open while doing lightering operations.
The Lone Star sank in the mouth of the Agushik River last Sunday, and it took until Friday night to plug any of the vents on the vessel's fuel tanks. Many stakeholders in the commercial fishery have lamented the lack of progress during the first few days of the response effort. Those concerns are shared by Incident Commander Tom Callahan. He admits that logistics slowed the response.
Things were hit and plans put in motion, equipment put in motion as soon as this occurred. And so Frank and I would have liked to have seen this done yesterday, several days ago. So it's frustrating working through, but would like to let everyone know that the best efforts are being made to get the right equipment, the right people, and the right plans in place to address this just as quickly as is humanly possible.
Tom Callahan is the incident commander for the owner of the Lone Star, Charles Burris. Callahan works for the Meredith Management Group, and he confirms that a special claims hotline has been established for fishermen affected by the closures and the spills related to the sinking of the Lone Star. The claims hotline is 610-725-8286. Once again, some of the fuel vents on the vessel have been plugged, and they will try to plug the additional vents today. The Bristol Bay Fisheries Report will continue in a moment. This is KDLG's Bristol Bay Fisheries Report. I'm Mike Mason. In recent years, many stakeholders in Bristol Bay's massive commercial salmon fishery have been stressing the importance of improving the quality of the total salmon pack out of the bay. Most stakeholders agree that one of the best ways to increase quality is to chill more fish at the point of harvest. Last year was the first year in history that over half of the Bristol Bay salmon pack was chilled at the point of harvest. The percentage was 52%. Last year, the drift fleet chilled 59% of their catch at the point of harvest. That was up from the 53% chilled back in 2011. The drifters account for nearly 95% of the chilled product in Bristol Bay. 80% of their chilled product was done so using refrigerated seawater systems. The largest supplier of RSW systems in Bristol Bay is Integrated Marine Systems, and sales engineer Doug Short notes that the company's been working with fishermen in the bay since the early 1990s. He confirms that there has been a tremendous increase in interest in using RSW systems in the bay.
I'd say it's, you know, probably tenfold in the last 4 to 5 years. The support, you know, for refrigeration, not just the systems, has increased. It definitely needs, we need more support people down the road, but I'd say it's tenfold at least.
Last year, drifters chilled 64.8 million pounds of raw product. 51.6 million pounds was chilled using RSW systems. The rest of the chilled product, 13.2 million pounds, was chilled using slush ice systems. One of the men at the forefront of the RSW industry in Bristol Bay is Pete Regan. He's the owner and the operator of Stay Cool Refrigeration in Naknek and Anchorage. He's been installing and servicing RSW systems in the bay since 1992. He started his own business in 1993. Regan believes there were less than 30 RSW systems in use in the 1980s, but he says once the 90s rolled around, more and more fishermen started to get interested in using RSW. However, he says the infrastructure was not yet widely available to take advantage of the improved quality that an RSW system could provide.
You'd have a refrigerated boat, and you go deliver to a tender that's not refrigerated, you know, and then you get your bonus, but what good does it do? Because you're delivering to a non-refrigerated boat, you know. So that was a little bit strange. So the bay had to come around quite a ways to get, you know, as functional as it is. You know, it was a big-time cannery market back then, you know. And then when all the farm fish started taking a hold and taking more, they had to take a different approach, you know, up here as far as how they're going to market their stuff. So they went after the wild salmon market instead of just the canning, you know. So then they got Leader Creek started up, and, you know, and you get these fresh fillets and pin boned and all that stuff. And, you know, the product started going, you know, and then they wanted quality.
Now in Bristol Bay, we have tenders that use RSW systems to chill the fish they receive from fishermen, and there are a handful of processors that stress the importance of fleets chilling fish at the point of harvest. Silver Bay Seafoods, which plans to enter the Bristol Bay market next year, plans to only buy fish chilled down using RSW or ice, and Leader Creek Seafoods, their drift fleet is almost exclusively an RSW fleet. IMS's Doug Short claims one of the biggest challenges to using RSW systems in Bristol Bay is the lack of trained people to install and to service the systems, which is why the company is supporting efforts to get more fishermen comfortable maintaining their own systems.
We do training classes with Sea Grant, and so we've been trying to do our part in the off-season, you know, on maintenance and upkeep and how to use them and, you know, just different ways you can go about refrigerating. But with Bristol Bay in particular, there seems, you know, everything happens so quickly, it's hard for the different refrigeration companies that are up there to staff up for that short season. I don't think that we can expect more service guys up there. I think we need to do more training so that they can keep these things running and really realize the potential out of them.
There are only a small handful of companies that service the Bristol Bay fleet, and most of them just operate in the bay seasonally. Stay Cool's Pete Regan admits that it's challenging to do business in the bay.
It's difficult. Let me tell you, it's the hardest thing to find is somebody that I spent, you know, years by myself, but then when I hired a guy, you know, train him, spend all summer working him and training him, they don't show up next year, you know. The end of the season happens and they're off, you know. They're getting people to come back every year. I got lucky, but it's taken a long time to find these people, you know.
Regan's advice for fishermen is to take the time to make sure that the RSW system they use is shut down properly at the end of the fishing season.
That and maintaining them, you know. You have to maintain things, you know, mechanical equipment, you know. You have to clean it up. I mean, it's in a wet area. You know, it just that moisture just eats them up. So to spray them down with corrosion block and, you know, take precautions to where they're not going to be big rust bucket when you come back.
There are a number of different RSW systems available that can serve different types of vessels, but they're not cheap. A brand new standard 7-ton hydraulic system installed and ready to go can run upwards of $40,000 to $50,000. IMS's Doug Short says everything can be done in the bay without having to take the vessel south, but he stresses that fishermen need to plan ahead.
You know, if it's planned and they do it before the season or after the season, it could be fairly economical. What drives the cost up is everybody shows up once, you know, they have a certain amount of time, plus they have to go fishing, and that starts to drive the cost up a little bit. So, you know, I think the infrastructure's there. It just, you know, it has to be more scheduled, and people have to be willing to work more with these vendors like Stakel, and, you know, there's Luma Fabrications, there's Foamer guys, but so that, you know, it has to be spread out more, because I don't think there's room for more vendors, because you can't make it pay in that 3 to 4 week season. And so in order to, you know, keep the guys that we have, spreading it out over a longer period of time drives costs down.
It's unclear if fishermen this year can match last year when over half of the total salmon pack was chilled at the point of harvest. Many stakeholders have told KDLG News they never thought they would see a majority of the catch being chilled by fishermen. Doug Short has been involved in the RSW business for nearly 30 years. He says eventually it had to happen.
I've always thought that that was the way we had to go with global competition and people's palates changing and how their buying patterns. I always thought it was possible. I'm surprised it actually took as long as it did.
You can find out more about the increase in chilling at the point of harvest in Bristol Bay in the 2012 Bristol Bay Processor Survey that was released earlier this year. The survey was conducted by Northern Economics for the Bristol Bay Regional Seafood Development Association. The 2012 survey can be found online at bbrsda.com. And the latest permit values report from the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission shows some changes in the Bristol Bay and Alaska Peninsula fisheries. CFEC puts the value of a Bristol Bay drift net permit at $94,900. That's up $800 from the value recorded back in May. In the last 12 months, there have been some significant swings in permit values. For instance, in July of last year, a Bristol Bay drift net permit was valued at $114,600. However, that value dropped each month until December, when the value was estimated at $87,400. Since then, the values increased each month, with the current value estimated at $94,900. The changes in the value of Bristol Bay set net permits has been much less dramatic. Currently, set-net permits are valued at about $41,100. In the last 12 months, the highest set-net value on record was the $42,500 in September of last year. Lowest value on record in the last 12 months was the $40,100 recorded in July of last year. The June monthly permit values report from the CFEC shows some significant changes in the permit values in some of the other salmon fisheries in Alaska. For instance, an Alaska Peninsula purse seine permit is now valued at $66,900. That's up from the $58,900 estimated value recorded in July of last year. The value of a Chignik purse seine set net permit is estimated at $155,000. That's up from the estimated value of $97,600 recorded in March. Alaska Peninsula drift net permits are currently valued at $84,700. That's way down from the estimated value of $127,800 recorded back in September of last year. Alaska Peninsula set net permits haven't changed very much in the last 12 months. Current value is estimated at $56,300. That's up slightly from the estimated value of $55,000 recorded back in April. And if you appreciate KDLG, please consider becoming a member during our annual membership drive coming up next week, July the 8th through July the 12th. And that concludes today's edition of the Bristol Bay Fisheries Report. The report can be found online at kdlg.org. And if you have something to add to our program, you can send me an email to mike@kdlg.org. Please join me next Friday afternoon at 4 o'clock for the next Bristol Bay Fisheries Report here on KDLG. Until then, please be safe, watch the weather, and tune in tomorrow.
The Bristol Bay Fisheries Report is brought to you by the Bristol Bay Regional Seafood Development Association, ensuring long-term growth in the world's greatest salmon fishery through investments in Bristol Bay science, infrastructure, marketing, and quality. The Bristol Bay RSDA, we are on board with you.